So we've heard an awful lot about harvesting practices and tree growth so far, and I was asked to talk specifically about the effects of litter manipulation on all different effects on the soil. I'm going to limit it mostly to carbon and nutrient cycling. And I'm also going to be talking about litter addition rather than just litter removal, so I'm using the term litter manipulation to include both. And I first got, I'm actually a plant ecologist by training, and I first got interested in the role of litter and litter fall because it links above ground and below ground processes in ecosystems. And we know that just the quantity of litter returning to the soil can affect temperature, the soil water balance, pH, as well as carbon and nutrient cycling and the activity of microbes in soil fauna. And we've already heard a little bit about that so far in this session. And although the forest floor and annual litter fall only contain about 10% of the total biomass carbon of a forest, it's really, really dynamic. And it can contain a very large proportion of the nutrients required for plant growth. And one of the things I'm most interested in is what happens below ground, what happens to the soil and soil processes when litter inputs change. And there are lots of things and anthropogenic activities that can contribute to changes in litter inputs as well as more generalized global change. I'm also specifically interested in what happens with large pulses of litter, for example, after a drought or after a storm. And I'm not going to go into that much, but it's something to bear in mind when looking at these litter addition treatments. And we use litter manipulation studies to try and answer some of these questions about soil processes, and this is nothing new. I've managed to get back to 1852 with studies of litter removal, so we've got at least 163 years of research to draw on. Andy already mentioned that litter removal was quite a common management practice. It was done in Central Europe for over 500 years. Essentially, before the advent of modern agriculture, straw was a very precious commodity. And so people would rake up forest litter and use it as animal bedding and then put it out on the fields as fertilizer when it was saturated with dung and urine. And this practice continued well through the 19th century and was finally discontinued around World War II. And it was so detrimental to the forest that people started publishing on this during the 19th century. And there was a whole book about litter removal or the importance of litter in forest ecosystems published in 1876, which is what I'm showing here. And this is just sort of to summarise all of these different changes in soil with the removal of organic matter or the removal of the forest floor. In general, litter removal decreases soil organic matter content and nutrient concentrations, as well as soil fauna and soil microbial biomass. But it upsets the soil water balance, it leads to greater temperature extremes at the soil surface, it can change pH and increase erosion and compaction. And so in general, this is really quite, or can be really quite bad news for the forest over the long term. And we've seen studies sort of for 10, 15 years in temperate forests. The sites in Central Europe that were raked for over 500 years, they used to be mixed deciduous forests, and now nothing can grow there except for Scots pine, and that's still the case 100 years, almost 100 years after litter removal was stopped. And one of the things that that really struck me when I was reviewing all of these papers was that we know next to nothing about the effects of litter manipulation in tropical forests. And I spent quite a long time working on it. In fact, I'm still working on it. I started off with the Gigante litter manipulation project. That's in Panama. You can see the red square at the top is right bang in the middle of the Panama Canal area, where there is the Barro Colorado Nature Monument on the map at the bottom here. It's administered by the Smithsonian. It's got fantastic research facilities. It's a great place to do tropical ecology. And I was working in a 40-hectare area of forest in the red square right at the bottom on the Gigante Peninsula, which is part of the nature monument there. It's old growth lowland tropical forest. It has a very strong dry season from December to May, which is also the period, main period of litterfall. And we set up 15 45 by 45 metre plots in the forest, and we carried out monthly litter manipulation, and that's still going on. That we started in January 2003. It's monthly because it's the tropics, litter's falling all year round, and it is a full-time job to rake up the litter in this many plots and spread it out on the litter addition plots. The pictures on the right should give you an idea of just how rapidly these changes occurred. So 2003, that photo was taken after the very first time we raked the litter, and I hope you can see on the far right there the difference in the soil after just 5 years. And one of the reasons for setting up this experiment in this particular site is because there's a fertiliser experiment at the same site. So the orange and grey and yellow squares you can see on the top and down the side of this map, those are the litter manipulation plots. Down the middle, the blue, purple and white squares, those are a fertiliser experiment where they used chemical fertilisers 4 times a year. And the rough amounts of nutrients that were added or removed are equivalent for nitrogen and potassium, which is fantastic because it means we can do a direct comparison. The large differences were phosphorus, so the fertiliser treatment added about 10 times the amount of phosphorus that's normally in the annual litterfall. And of course, we with the litter manipulation experiments were either adding or removing a lot of carbon with that litter. And just to show you some idea of the importance of litter in tropical forest nutrient cycling, these are the soil nutrients after 7 years, I think. Either 5 years or 7 years. And you can see almost immediately in the first panel, soil nitrate concentrations were more affected by the litter treatments than they were by the addition of organic nitrogen, which is quite surprising. Litter addition in particular massively increased both ammonium and nitrate in the soil. And litter removal obviously removed large amounts of nitrogen. When you add 50 kilos of phosphorus to the forest soil, you get a massive increase in soil phosphate. The interesting thing is that after 10 years, Joe Yavitt, who's one of the PIs on the fertiliser project, did some calculations and reckoned that about 80% of all the phosphorus added as fertiliser was still in the soil. It hadn't actually been taken up by the trees. Soil potassium increased with potassium fertilisation, but the interesting thing here is that it decreased quite strongly with litter removal. So litter removal had the greatest effect on mobile nutrients, and this is probably a combination both of the removal of those nutrients with the litter, but also the increase in leaching losses because the protective layer has been removed from the soil surface. And it's rather nice the way these changes were almost immediately reflected in nutrients in the foliage. So this is from fresh litter. You can see in the nitrogen fertilised plots, we've got higher nitrogen concentrations in leaves or mixed litter. But again, the larger changes in or a greater increase in the litter addition plots. Some of the phosphorus is being taken up. We can see that here. You can really see that nice signal of decreased potassium in the litter removal plots. The bars without labels, by the way, they're not significant. The treatments were so unbelievably variable that although the mean looks like a very large change, it wasn't significant. So from this overall, we can sort of say that nitrogen and potassium availability are really strongly affected by litter manipulation in this forest. And this is kind of a surprise because this forest is supposed to be quite rich in nitrogen and very poor in phosphorus. And although we're seeing these large responses to increased phosphorus in the fertilised plots, we're not really seeing a big response to the litter treatments. And litter removal hasn't, to date, had a significant effect on soil phosphorus, or it seems even phosphorus uptake. So just to sort of summarise that, tropical forests are adapted to nutrient uptake from litter. Litter is a very important part of the nutrient cycle in tropical forests, and this is basically the first experiment to really demonstrate that on a large scale. The slow release of nutrients from litter is absolutely key for nutrient retention because it prevents the losses of mobile elements. And litter removal has demonstrated just how important this is for things like elements like nitrogen and potassium. And we think that most of the differences that we've seen in this comparison of litter manipulation and fertilisation is simply because the nutrients are supplied in stoichiometric balance with carbon. And just to go back to this this list, after 8 years of litter removal in tropical forests, we saw evidence for all of these changes in our forest plots. And Susan has already said that things happen really fast in the tropics. So we have evidence for all of this, apart from we haven't formally measured erosion, but you can see it in the plots. Anything on a slope, you can see increased or massive soil erosion in the litter removal plots. And following on from this work on nutrients, I got really interested in carbon dynamics. So we're adding and removing tons of carbon every year, and this is particularly relevant for soil carbon storage and climate change. And a Chinese student, Shan Su, got in touch with me a couple of years ago. She revisited my review of litter manipulation studies and actually did a formal meta-analysis of litter manipulation studies in the field and looked at their effects on different aspects of carbon dynamics. She looked at 70 different experiments across 5 biomes and 4 continents. And sort of one of the overall results was, I guess this is not massively surprising. When you increase litter inputs to the soil, you increase soil carbon storage. However, if you look at the panel on the right, you also increase soil respiration. And the slope of this relationship is steeper than the slope for soil carbon storage. And what this suggests is that turnover is increasing more rapidly than storage as you increase the amount of litter to return to the soil. And we've seen this in our plots in Gigante. On the left panel there, that's the less surprising result. When you double litter inputs, you double CO2 derived from that litter. But more surprisingly, when you double litter inputs, you also significantly increase the amount of CO2 derived from soil organic carbon. And we think that this is, or we're almost certain that this is priming effect that Susan's already presented. And the big question is whether this can offset carbon sequestration in forest soils. And Shan has also had a better look at this. This is an incredibly complex experiment, so I'm not going to go into any detail. Basically, it's a greenhouse experiment with 6 levels of soil organic matter content, and then plus or minus plant roots and plus or minus litter addition. And she showed her main result from this experiment is that root and litter inputs interact to increase soil microbial biomass and macroaggregate formation, and that these then positively influence soil carbon storage. The key here is that you had strong priming effects with either litter or roots, but when both litter and roots were added together or included in the pots together, this mitigated priming effects. And so I'm going to conclude the talk by showing you an ongoing experiment. This experiment is actually open to anybody who's interested in coming and doing any kind of measurements in our plots. So this is a little bit of a plug for it. We're looking at carbon dynamics in 2 completely different systems. We've got mixed deciduous temperate forest in Whiteham Woods in Oxfordshire in the UK, and we've set up a whole set of new plots on Gigante Peninsula in Panama. And we're looking, we have completely parallel experiments at these 2 sites. Litter manipulation, plus we've also got a C4 litter addition. This is where forest litter has been replaced by maize leaves so that we can do some natural abundance isotope work. We also have a fantastic system that applies artificial root exudates in the field to increase root exudation experimentally. And we've got a whole series of lab incubations to look at priming effects in a lot more detail. And the aim of this really is principally to look at priming effects, but also to try and link these lab experiments and field studies properly and make this data available for ecosystem carbon models. So if you're interested in any of this, please do get in touch. And with that, I'd like to say thank you for listening, and thank you to everybody who has been involved in these massive projects. Yes. Yes. In fact, the first priming effects study I did, I also used I used a C4 grass to do a natural abundance isotope experiment, and I foolishly used the stems. It was wild sugar cane, and it turns out that termites absolutely love wild sugar cane, and they went completely crazy, and they just infested my plots, and we were getting these crazy high values of soil respiration just from the termites in the soil. So yes, lots of termites. I haven't done the calculations, but this has been explained to me as by a soil physicist. Most of it is quite simply raindrop impact, and it's actually really quite a massive effect. And the litter basically acts as kind of a sponge, so it takes up a lot of that impact, as well as soaking up a lot of the water. When you remove that, the impact's going straight onto the soil. So we were worried about trampling from all the measurements and from the raking, and he actually showed us that the impact from rain alone, we don't have to worry about trampling on foot, so, or by people. we were talking about this earlier. We've got an amazing data set of tree growth, and that you can't see a thing if you look at tree growth across the board. Very recently, and I actually took this out of the talk because I thought it's not soil. We do see effects on litter production. So we've got significantly increased litter production in the litter addition plots, both annual litter production and growing season litter production. And I very recently analysed some data for four separate tree species. And we have two tree species that are growing better in both treatments relative to the controls. One species that is growing worse in the litter removal plots, and one species that's growing better in the litter addition plots, which kind of explains why we're not seeing an overall effect on tree growth. This isn't uncommon in the tropics because it has so much to do with the life history strategy of the trees. What it does look like is the trees that are shade tolerant, slow growing, and can persist for a long time in the understory are the ones that are growing better under disturbance, which is probably because they are better competitors for resources when the going gets tough. Or under disturbance. And the species that's growing better with litter addition is a very fast-growing pioneer, so it's probably able to make most use of the additional nutrients.
Thank you very much.